On Shaw i Leopardstown, Christmas means one thing. Rossioch at its very best, where champions meet challengers and Cordia reunite. From Nullag 26th to 29th, the biggest names, August Nicopolis Far, take to one of jump racing's most iconic stages. Och, ni stoppin' on crack on shin. It's a celebration that will have the crowds igdausa long after the final race. Unwrap the magic of racing at Leopardstown Christmas Festival. Visit leopardstown.com. Nullag Hunadiev.
Off the ball, GAA.
We kind of strayed through the group and then we took a hammer in against Donegal. Then we just left. A bit of a sour taste in my mouth anyway.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Was this Christmas? Send them packing with a Ryanair gift card.
Rain becoming widespread tonight before clearing by the morning. A touch of frost possible as well. Breezy for a time with moderate to fresh southeasterly winds and lowest temperatures of 0 to 5 degrees. And now you're up to date on News Talk.
The News Run on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Welcome along. It is Wednesday's Off the Ball. We've got a packed show between now and 10 p.m. We've got five games in the Premier League tonight, including Liverpool without Mo Salah, as we'll talk about in a moment, for their game this evening. Also, we're going to be talking Wednesday night rugby. The World Cup draw has been made. This new format means there's a round of 16 coming in, so maybe Ireland can finally win a knockout game. They'll probably play Georgia in the round of 16, as things, if they play out as planned. Scotland again as opposition, Uruguay and Portugal as well. The route has been mapped to the final for many people already in Australia. And John Myler is going to be with us later this hour as well. He was the 1987 All-Ireland club football winning captain. St Finbarr's have got the Munster final this week against Dingle in the football, and their Camogie team are also into the All-Ireland final in Croke Park as well, all in the 150th anniversary of the club. They are in fact older than the GAA itself. Delighted to say Keith Tracy is here with me. How are you, Keith?
I'm great, Will. How are you?
I'm good. Cameron Hill is here for the News Round as well. How are you, Cameron?
Hello, lads. How are things?
Good, good. Text, if you want to get them in, 53106 is the traditional way. You can WhatsApp us as well for free, 087-9180-180. And if you're watching us on YouTube, leave us a comment there. Leave us your comment in the live chat and we will chat to you between now and about 7:30. The big team news, Keith, coming out of this one. We wonder what was going to happen with Liverpool. So 53 games in a row, Mo Salah played. He's then rested for the game the weekend just gone by. Liverpool take on Sunderland tonight. Mo Salah again on the bench. Dominic Szoboszlai is going to play in the right wing.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Liverpool won without Mohamed Salah in the team in the last game, so very much copy and paste. I know Alexander Isak scored, Florian Wirtz played a little bit better. So I don't see it as a massive talking point. I know Salah not being in the team generates a talking point, but from Arnie Slot's point of view, the last team that went out won, so copy and paste and go again. But I'm sure if Salah, you know, I know Arnie Slot has referenced Mohamed Salah's professionalism and being dropped. He still has 4 goals and 2 assists this season. There's only Cody Gakpo in a Liverpool jersey that has provided more. So possibly there could be a knock coming on the door, but doesn't seem like an issue just yet. But you'd imagine if the next game and the next game, Mohamed Salah will become increasingly unhappy at Liverpool.
Well, the only one thing is, so they seem, and again, where there's cause and effect here, they won the game in the Champions League away from home at Frankfurt when he was rested as opposed to dropped. He was obviously dropped at the weekend just gone by. Again, they won comfortably at West Ham. Maybe they win this game against Sunderland tonight at Anfield. Then you start to see a trend that maybe they might be better off without him in the team.
Yeah, possibly. And it has become a talking point, I know. I think Salah will always score goals. You know, the level of goals obviously depends on what's around him. He will probably point to Trent Alexander-Arnold moving on. And a lot of people have described that as a tap being turned off behind Salah. You know, the defence of Liverpool has been really poor. They don't seem to be able to score from set pieces. They don't defend set pieces particularly well. So there's a whole host of problems. It's very easy to look at Mohamed Salah's numbers and think, well, there's a big chunk of the issue. But in truth, you know, other than the West Ham game and last week when they won, other than that, there's still been a lot of very, very poor performers. You still wouldn't say Wirtz has come to the party just yet, although he played a little bit better. Isak the same. Kirk has still big question marks about him. I know Andy Robertson is knocking around now. So there's big, big question marks over Liverpool. So although it looks a little bit better against West Ham, I'm still not to be convinced that they've turned the corner yet, because defensively, a little bit all over the place.
There was a great tweet after that game. Don't mistake starting a good run of form with beating West Ham at this moment in time. They're not particularly good. But I think we will get a really good sense of where Liverpool are at, or whether this is turning a corner against a team like Sunderland, who've probably, even though they're doing so well and they're so high up the table, I think people are still underestimating. I mean, they beat Bournemouth, which was no mean feat the other weekend, and I think it's when they play the likes of a Liverpool or an Arsenal that you really get an appreciation of how well Reggie Lebris is going to be, like how well he's regarded and how well he's been doing so far. So it's a massive test going to Anfield, but yeah, maybe Sal on the bench is probably the right move.
Yeah, it's look, the other thing as well, Cameron, maybe they're half thinking with a month's time in mind when Mo Salah is going to disappear for the African Cup of Nations, and maybe this is a case of Salvesay is going to play there a bit. Like, they haven't worked out the right wing back issue yet. So Frimpong was injured when he came in, picked up another injury. Bradley got to play some game time there. We wonder why was Joe Gomez not playing. Then Gomez plays well at the weekend, so maybe he goes to right back, and that means the Salvesay doesn't have to go there anymore. I think the whole right side is an equation they need to work out. It's not just Mo Salah.
Yeah.
Well, we shall see. 8:15 kickoff for that one. Killer for the radio. I must admit, those games finishing at around about 10:30 tonight. But
never think of us.
It's not never think of us. We're the last thing. You know, other sports programs. Thank you, Premier League. And I did wonder as well, Keith, about some of the teams that have to travel on these. And there's a lot of this over Christmas as well. You're a Chelsea fan. Leeds, you know, reigniting the 1970 FA Cup final rivalry and all that. And those two clubs seem to have hated each other over the years. If you're a Chelsea fan, you are not going up to Elland Road for an 8:15 kickoff on a Wednesday.
It's difficult, isn't it? Especially if you have a job and a family, trying to finish your job and then tell the other half, look, I'm going to shoot up to Leeds now for the game. I'll be back in the early hours of the morning. And by the time you open your eyes in the morning, I'll be gone out of the bed for work. It's a difficult, difficult sell for anybody wanting to go to it. But look, I've actually been impressed with Leeds. I know they're 18th at the minute. They started quite well, started to slip back down. But the last team to beat Chelsea was Sunderland, a newly promoted team. So if they're looking for little caveats to do well, I think Chelsea have done really, really well. A lot of people have stopped me after the Arsenal and Chelsea game and said, isn't that 2 points drop from an Arsenal point of view? I know Chelsea went down to 10 men after the Casado sending off, but without Gabriel, without Saliba, I think maybe Chelsea missed 2 points on that one.
So I thought Chelsea were better when they went to 10.
Yeah, I think they bossed the game when Casado was on the pitch. They were bossing the game. It went probably 50-50, a little bit scrappy. Probably still Chelsea as the better team, even down to 10. But I felt, given the week that Arsenal had against Chelsea, Bayern and Spurs, you're thinking this is a really tough end to a week, another London derby. So I was happy that Arsenal got out with a draw. And I a lot of people are saying, you just dropped 2 points. I think it's the opposite way around. I think Chelsea sort of smell blood. But I did say in the build of that game, I don't see Chelsea as proper Premier League title contenders for one reason or another. Maybe it's the back four, maybe it's the little bit of inconsistency they've shown, maybe it's the fact that they've been beaten by Sunderland and Brighton already this season. I'm not sure what it is. I think Enzo Maresca is doing a brilliant job, but I don't see them going anywhere near a title race.
Cameron is a self-confessed Leeds fan, so I'm not outing him by asking him this. A slump of form at the moment, but did you take any encouragement from the fight back on Saturday against City?
I think so, and I think the fact that Farke came out at the end and gave out about Donnarumma going down with the hamstring, as we've seen so many times in particularly the League of Ireland over the last two seasons, and they managed to reset and get a 3-2 win, Manchester City. But I'm encouraged by the lineup tonight. I think the fact that Anton Stach is back and will give something of a bit of a more robust presence in the midfield when Leeds maybe haven't had that, or it's either been a case of having Stach and Longstaff in the team and being uber defensive, or having Ayo Tanaka in and being way too fluid in midfield and teams just cutting you open. It's just where the goal's coming. I think that's been the question Leeds fans have been asking all year. Calvert-Lewin by no means has been the solution to those problems yet. He's had some really good positional play, but that final touch just has eluded him. Maybe Lucas Nmecha is finally hitting a bit of form and could be the answer to that, but that's what's going to keep you up. And I think it's not a surprise that going into December, Leeds are in the bottom three. They really need a big performance tonight.
Yeah, loads of other news as well. We'll get to in a second the news. John Patrick on the text: Liverpool defence, an absolute shambles. Lucky the West Ham are toothless in attack. How toothless they were. Not even a shot in target on Sunday in our live game here and off the ball. But we shall talk more about that in a sec. Cameron, we've got some good news from the pool in Poland to kick things off.
Brilliant news. Beacons are being lit in Galway as we speak, John, or Will, because John Short has claimed gold in the 200 metres backstroke at the European Short Course Championships in Poland this evening, rounding off a fantastic couple of days for him. He set a new world junior record in this evening's medal race, coming home in 1 minute 47.89 seconds. It means that he's broken the national record for the third time in 2 days. Now, Ellie McCarthy will go in the women's 100-metre breaststroke final in the next few minutes. In fact, she's in the pool right now. Also this hour, you've Ellen Walsh with a 100 metres individual medley semi-final. They also set a new record in the 4x50-metre mixed medley earlier today, a new national record. John Short involved in that one. So all in all, an impressive start to the championships for Ireland.
Indeed, and we've got Diane Whiffen getting ready for the 1500 metres final tomorrow, where he could win his second medal of the week as well. John Short is shortlisted, by the way, for the Olympic Federation Awards, which are on this weekend. We're supporting them here on OTB. And you know what, a time for Leif Oates. Go and win yourself a European medal just before the voting closes on that one as well. In the rugby, we'll have Gerry Thornley with us just after 8 o'clock, but you know, this is what Irish fans love, talking themselves up ahead of a World Cup and finding a way to navigate a loss in the knockout stages. Who are Ireland going to play in Australia, Cameron?
In the final, you mean?
Well, let's go for the pool. The pool stage is our final, Cameron.
Yes, indeed. And in the bracket, Ireland will avoid New Zealand, South Africa and France until the semi-finals at the earliest in the next Rugby World Cup. That's if they win Pool D. So the draw for the 2027 edition of the tournament took place earlier today. Ireland are in Pool D, drawn with Scotland for the third tournament in a row, as well as Uruguay and Portugal. The countdown and planning could officially begin for head coach Andy Farrell in the IRFU with just under 22 months to go. The new Nations Championship rules out the possibility of a bespoke summer tour or an Autumn Nations series next year. But Farrell hinted that the wheels are in motion to give a taste of international rugby to as many players as possible within the Irish system over the next 2 years.
I think a good example would be before the last World Cup, we'd an Emerging Ireland tour, and everyone thought that that could have been, you know, a little bit late in the day as far as preparations for that's concerned. But I think with seven lads from that tour, or six, I might be exaggerating a bit, in regards to being involved, certainly in preparation, and lads really putting their hands up to be involved within that World Cup squad. So it just shows you how quickly things can change, and obviously there's a plan of what you think could happen along the way, but you move with that as you go as well.
So I'll run through the pools in full then. Hosts Australia will have New Zealand, Chile and Hong Kong, China in Pool A. South Africa begin their defence with Italy, Georgia and Romania in Pool B. Argentina, Fiji, Spain and Canada comprise Pool C. Your France, Japan, USA and Samoa in Pool E. And England and Wales will face Tonga and Zimbabwe. They comprise Pool F.
Right, so the most important thing about that is Ireland win against Scotland, beat the other two teams, Georgia in round of 16, finally win a knockout game at a World Cup for the first time, go to a quarterfinal, play against Argentina. We talk it up all week. Felipe Contamoni's Argentina probably beat Ireland. But if they were to win, they would most likely play England in a semi-final. And then you've got the big guns the other side, South Africa, New Zealand and France. So that is the path, but it is a full 2 years away. Mm. It was 3 years away the draw took place the last time, Keith, for the Rugby World Cup. By comparison, Friday, we have the draw now for the World Cup proper in North America. Mm. Hamer's going to be chatting to us on Friday afternoon as well after that. I think it's much better to have a draw 6 months out from World Cup where you can actually build the interest. It's very difficult 2 years out to go, yeah, the team could be good in 2 years' time, but who knows?
Yeah, it's the same with the playoff, isn't it? You try and sit down and talk about Chechki and, you know, what the key battles will be, but you just don't know who's going to be fit, who's going to be in form. And March seems like a million miles away, and given the fact that we're, you know, bouncing high with all sorts of confidence at the minute, you probably think, you know, the sooner the better for the game. But yeah, I'd be like you, Will. I like the build up to it, the drawn out build up to it, and you know, you can feel the tension build as you get there. So yeah, I'm happy. I can't wait for it to kick off, all in all. But isn't it brilliant to just be in the draw? Because when we had Portugal and Hungary on the way to the Portuguese game, walking to the Aviva, I thought, what's the point? You know, what is the point here? So the fact that we're still alive, we're going to be in the puff for the draw, and we have the game in March, it feels like an absolute bonus. But you know, I've Troy Parrott and this Irish team has gone a long way to restoring that little bit of confidence and pride for me in the Irish team.
Yeah, the thing about being a fan, you never quite give up.
Yeah,
even
you
though
never
you think,
do.
You think, oh, beating Portugal and then having to beat Hungary and Budapest seemed like an impossible task, especially after the Armenia game away from home. I thought it was game over. I thought that was the end of Halgrimsson. I thought we were going to be discussing a new manager on this show for 2 or 3 months before it actually happened, and yada, yada, yada. And next thing then they win a game and you go, actually, now we've got this bit of hope. And maybe Suchek's actually fallen out with the coach. And it looks like they're changing the management team. And you draw all these kind of little bits of inspiration that you think, actually, things are going to be okay in Prague. And maybe then it's the case of playing Denmark. George as well. George, very playful on the WhatsApp. Does winning a round of 16 clash break the mental block of having never won a quarter final? Look, no, I presume is the simple answer to that. But at the same time, it's a win in the knockout stages, and at least you can stop talking about it then. And Eamon Fogarty, somebody, there's always the World Cup in 2031 to finally go past the quarterfinals. Eamon. What do you reckon, Cameron? How far are Ireland going in this World Cup?
I don't know. Like, Argentina, it's a really, really good draw. It's probably the best in terms of, like, escaping New Zealand and South Africa and France before a semi-final. Argentina, we have plenty of history with them at Rugby World Cups. They seem to do the exact opposite to us, where they just peak perfectly well in time for this, like the end of that 4-year cycle. So it'll be tricky. I think we've heard a lot about how challenging England found their trip down to Argentina this summer and how that's been the making of that team. And it's a prospective England semi-final. I mean, it's not a cakewalk, like going to a World Cup final never is, but I think Scotland and then probably a little bit more of a rest game in the last 16 is an interesting sort of change to how it's been over the last few years, where we've had our toughest games backloaded, and it's meant that Ireland teams have been beaten up and bruised heading into the knockout stages. So it might serve us well, really.
This form is a load of nonsense, really, when it comes to having competitive interest in games. But by the time you get to the quarterfinals, the chaff and the wheat will have been separated at that point. Anyway, the Premier League tonight, Man City, all the drama last night. But Arsenal can potentially go back 5 points clear tonight.
With a win at home to Brentford, will Manchester City, of course, that 5-4 victory over Fulham last night at Craven Cottage. Boss Mikel Arteta says they don't need external pressure from a title rival to keep their trophy challenge going.
Our motivation comes from preparation and how we prepare for every game to try to be better than the opposition. And where we are in the league and what we are doing, I don't think we need any more motivation than that.
Brentford head coach Keith Andrews feels his players are ready for the challenge tonight.
It's pretty obvious it's going to be a difficult task. I think it's also a task that we need to embrace. I think we're in a really good place as a team. Our confidence should be at a place where we're confident of going to a place like that and absolutely competing to win the game. And that's where I want us to be, and that's where I feel we will be.
Eberechi, Eze, Bukayo Saka and Jurrien Timber are on the bench for the Gunners tonight. They start Martin Odegaard, while Keith Andrews has made 5 changes to his Brentford side. Club captain Nathan Collins and striker Igor Thiago among those named on the bench. Kick-off at the Emirates Stadium is at 7:30. Also at that time, you have Brighton taking on Aston Villa, Burnley facing Crystal Palace, Nottingham Forest going away to Wolves. Well, as we've mentioned, at 8:15, Liverpool take on Sunderland at Anfield, and Chelsea make the trip to Elland Road to face Leeds United.
Just on Brentford there, Keith, the changes that they've made, so 5 switches in the weekend, taking out Collins, who's been an ever-present up until this point in the league, and then Igor Tudor, who's been so good for them up front all season, their top scorer. Would that indicate to you they've got one eye on Aston Villa at the weekend and they're thinking we're probably not beating Arsenal?
Very possibly. It does look like that, but look, Brentford on the road this season haven't been great, so that would maybe lead you to believe that Keith Andrews had looked at this fixture and thought, you know what, we'll see what we can get from it, but we'll go and target the weekend. Brentford have 3 points from their 6 away games this season. They've already lost to Brighton, Palace, Fulham, Sunderland and Forest on the road. At home, it's a different story. They've beaten Manchester United and Liverpool at home. They're very, very strong, but I'm an Arsenal fan. I'm delighted that Thiago's not playing. I've got to be honest, he's really put himself about. His finishing ability looks excellent, but there's still big dangers there. Obviously, Kiode's long throw, anywhere, any throw-ins in the Arsenal half, that's going to be getting pumped into the box. Otara, very, very quick as well. Yarmolenko and Janelt, they can go and get up the top end of the pitch in the blink of an eye in transition. They're very dangerous.
Set piece team. Experts versus set piece experts.
It is, yeah. I've got the set piece table here in front of me. Arsenal are top of the set piece table. They've got 12 set piece goals so far. Brentford are 5th with 8 set piece goals. And surprisingly, I say surprisingly, but given how poor Manchester City and Liverpool have been this season, they're down at 17th. And 18th in the set piece table, only 3 goals from set pieces. It's all relative. I remember Sam Allardyce coming in and banging this drum at Blackburn about set pieces and how important they are, and we all sort of rolled our eyes and thought games are won, you know, in playing a game of football. But my God, so often set pieces separate teams. So if you're up the right end of scoring set pieces and, you know, up the right end of defending them properly, you'd be there or thereabouts where you want to be.
Well, Mick McCarthy made a fair point in his podcast where he said, look, you spend loads of money trying to get wingers who can cross the ball in. Why would you not want someone who's got a really good throw in who can do exactly what the winger would do? And you're getting this for free. In fact, you just need to make sure that you're really good at them. You do repetitions and everyone is well drilled and you've got a chance for an extra chance. It's going to be Martin O'Neill's last game in charge of Celtic tonight as well, because Wilfred Nancy has been officially appointed. So his interim charge comes to an end. You've got Hearts taking on Kilmarnock at Tynecastle, while Rangers against Dundee United. You want to bring us a bit of Andy Murray as well?
Yeah, so this was a piece that was done on the Tennis Podcast this week. Three-time Grand Slam winner Andy Murray revealing that he didn't enjoy his career until after he retired from tennis. So the Scot was speaking to the Tennis Podcast this week and explained why he was so hard on himself during his playing days.
Within probably a week to 10 days of retiring, my perspective completely changed on my own career. Like, at times, you know, when I was in the middle of it, like number three in the world or four in the world, and it's rubbish. Or you get to the final of the Australian Open for the fifth time and it's a terrible result. And the media will also help you feel that way at times as well. You know, like, and sport is difficult in that sense, is that you have a great achievement and you're made to feel like it is a failure as well. And, you know, the athletes, obviously, because we're competitive and want to win, we feel that too. But when going to a press conference afterwards and it's like, you know, the mood is so, like, disappointing and stuff, you know, you will feel it, feel it more. So when you're in the thick of it and it's your job and everything, like, you know, disappointed when I didn't win majors. You put so much into it that it, you know, you feel a bit like you failed. But I went and watched my daughter running a cross-country race and she finished, like, seventh. And I was like, oh my God, like, that's unbelievable. Like, it's so good. So, like, as a parent, I'm like, that's amazing. But when I was playing tennis, we finished second in one of the biggest competitions, and you're like, this is just a disaster. It's just not an ideal way to look at things. It's hard to get much happiness and pleasure out of the sport when that is, you know, the mindset. I think a lot of athletes suffer from.
Yeah, do a lot of athletes suffer from that, Keith? The idea that in your career, you're constantly comparing yourself, and no matter how well you do, as Andy Murray say, winning three Grand Slam championships, three majors, and still not being happy. And then a couple of days after he retires, suddenly, oh, I didn't actually do so badly after all. It's literally being taken out of that space.
I think that's bred in. I can only speak about footballers, but I think that's bred into footballers, that you never feel like you can stand still and smell the roses and pat yourself on the back. Because I know in my own experience, I only had to look across the dressing room at the likes of Robbie Keane or a Damien Duff to think, I might be doing well, but I'm not doing that well. So I was always one of them as well that thought, yeah, I'm doing okay, but there's people out there that are really, really ripping it up. And it's not until you retire or you stop and or you get a bad injury and you think, Jesus, I was in a really good flow there. I was hitting top form. But yeah, I understand everything Andy Murray is saying there, that you don't quite enjoy it while you're in it. But it's when you come out of it, you miss it an awful lot.
All right. Keith is going to stay with us. Cameron, many thanks for joining us for the news round. Cameron will have the bulletins later tonight here on News Talk as well. It is a very busy night in the Premier League, as you mentioned, all those games, and Celtic in action against Dundee as well. We'll be talking to John Myler in a few minutes about St Finbarr's 150 years this year. They're in the Munster Club football final this weekend against Dingle, and they're also through to the All-Ireland Club Camogie final in Croke Park against Athenry on Sunday week as well. So potentially some big trophies for them in year 150. That is the news round for this evening. Time for the Cash Machine.
News Talk's Christmas Cash Machine.
Indeed, the Christmas Cash Machine is here, and there will be a guaranteed quarter.
Off the ball. GAA.
We kind of strayed through the group and then we took a hammering against Donegal. Then we just left. Bit of a sour taste in my mouth anyway.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.